We'll reconvene this meeting, County Board of Commissioners. Next on our agenda is item 13. This is discussion only, though it won't be action taken. This will be an update from Robert Little, Noxious Weed Coordinator for the Nevada Department of Agriculture.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Robert Little. I am the Noxious Weed Coordinator for the Nevada Department of Agriculture. I run the statewide program, which is aimed, it's actually in statute, I am focused on controlling noxious weeds throughout the state. In my program, I have one other person that's in there, so you can tell with only two people trying to control noxious weeds throughout the state, it's a bit of a daunting task. The Department of Agriculture, the Nevada Department of Agriculture, has gone through quite a few changes over the last couple of years and reductions, and also we have expanded quite a bit. And within those reductions and expansions, my program has seen quite a changeover in staff as well. I am fairly new into this program. I've been here for about a year and a half now in this position. So in an effort to kind of rebuild some of the working relationships or, you know, form some new working relationships throughout the state with county commissions and other entities, I'm kind of on a statewide campaign talking to the different county commissions and everything to try to build an infrastructure for noxious weed control in the state. And with that, I've kind of put a bit of a presentation together, and I'd like to go through that with you guys and just kind of update where we're going and how we can get more involved in controlling noxious weeds. So in my presentation, a couple quick things I'm going to cover are, you know, kind of what are noxious weeds, a little bit of a definitions there. Noxious weed problems here in Story County, current local efforts that are going on today and have been going on, you know, over the last couple of years for controlling noxious weeds. Noxious weed statutes, I oversee and am the regulator for a number of the noxious weed statutes that are in Nevada Revised Code and also Nevada Revised Statutes. That are in Chapter 555, county responsibilities per statute, and also future directions that maybe we can embark on down the road. So a quick definition of just what are what is a noxious weed. There's a couple of the ways that we view weeds. You know, many of our common or nuisance weeds are, you know, ones that we see all the time, even though they can be a problem. They are not weeds. They are invasive plants that that aren't listed as a noxious weed in the state of Nevada, and I'm going to follow through on that so I can bring that home a little bit. In the state of Nevada, we designate which weeds are noxious to the state. Noxious weeds are ones that means any species of plant which is or likely to be detrimental or destructive and difficult to control or eradicate. These are typically problems for ranchers, livestock producers, and stuff like that, and people like that. Or, you know, they devastate our riparian systems, or just outcompete all of our natives. Are typically the ones that we call invasive, and the ones that we call noxious are also within that subset of invasives. But these are the ones that we have listed here in the state as ones that we will control and regulate. The state has 47 species that we have listed as noxious. I have brought for the commission, and I have more for if the public would like some weed guides here. These are just a field guide of the weeds that are listed here in the state that we regulate on a daily basis. Some of our typical weeds that we think about as being just weeds are, you know, your common dandelions and stuff that you see in your landscapes and your lawns and stuff like that. Those are just ones that we call nuisance weeds. Cheatgrass is also considered to be one that we consider to be a nuisance weed, although it does show large numbers of how it grows. It infests large acreage. Is a fire danger, but because cheatgrass is a plant that is so well established here in the state, we cannot designate it as a noxious weed just because we can never regulate something that covers millions of acres in the state. It would be impossible. We'd be serving notice to everybody in the state, and so it's just something we can't conceivably do. But the ones that we, you know, is a funny cartoon that I threw up in there. The ones that we can actually control and hope to keep out of our state are those the ones that are listed in that book as the ones we consider to be noxious. So anyway, All listed noxious weeds are split into categories in our state, and it deals with the distribution of them in our state. So our category A weeds are generally not found or limited in distribution across Nevada. This weed that we have up here, this pretty purple-looking thing, is purple loosestrife. It is a waterways plant. We don't have much of it in Nevada. So when we get infestations of something like this, because we have such limited infestation of it in Nevada, it's one that we try to eradicate right away as soon as we come across it. And I'm going to get into how we go about eradicating weeds and some things like that, and how the county can get involved with that as well a little bit later in my presentation. And then as we go down the list, Category B weeds are a little bit more well-established throughout the state. They may be in certain pockets and things like that. This one that's listed here is Medusa Head. This is actually the number one weed of concern for Nevada as far as the Department of Agriculture and many other agencies are concerned, and I'm going to go into that one a little bit just because it is the new cheatgrass that is coming down the pike that is way more invasive and way more of a fire danger than cheatgrass ever thought about being. And then category C weeds are ones that we know we have large populations or fairly well or are somewhat well established throughout the state. As you drive into Reno, if you're coming through the south, you see perennial pepperweed. This is one of them. That's the white. That's the thing that seems to dominate all the landscape out there. It's also called tall white top. It's down in like the south part of Reno, like Renowned and all that area. You'll see this just covering the complete landscape. Although it is a listed noxious weed, we're limited in funds and resources on how we can actually go about controlling something like that. So we try to only control that in areas where it is not established or has never been established. So some of the biggest noxious weeds concerns that are facing Story County at this time just kind of a little bit of the limited work that is actually being done to control noxious weeds in Story County right now. There are, just because of the change that the Department of Agriculture has been going through, we have had a lot of lack of communication with Story County on controlling noxious weeds. We haven't really worked with you guys in the past on how we can better partner together and to keep some of these weeds from invading Story County and some of the residents and also through the waterways and the ditch systems and some of the other things. So this is something that we definitely want to work on. These noxious weeds can be a serious problem for the valued recreation and habitat areas here in Story County. Especially when it comes to, a lot of Story County here in Virginia City is dedicated towards tourism dollars and stuff like that. So when it comes to the funding that, comes through this county and through the city and other areas, these noxious weeds, when they get established, can really create a problem for tourism or the wildlife or the habitat or something like that. So it's definitely something we want to look at to try to control and keep out of Story County. Some of the other issues is you are surrounded by some other counties that have large infestations of noxious weeds. And so we would like to work with you on trying to keep those weeds from invading into your county. That's part of my job is to really try to control the noxious weeds. And so I've already kind of talked about the perennial pepperweed issues that Reno is facing. They are also facing a huge Medusa Head infestation, and it's really quick and easy to transport that from the Reno area up into Virginia City, just with the amount of traffic that goes through here and everything else. So it's something we want to keep an eye out on, especially when we're in this area, where fire could be such a potential hazard in this area. You have one of the few reported infestations of Dalmatian toadflax in northern Nevada, or actually in the state. And I'm going to cover on what Dalmatian toadflax is in a minute, but it is another nasty one that we're hoping really doesn't get a handle on some of the areas either in Story County and throughout Nevada. So I mentioned some of those weeds, and I was going to kind of go over some of these species of concern for this county in general. We have other issues that face some of our southern counties, but up in northern Nevada, these are some of the prime ones that we're kind of concerned about. Talk a little bit about perennial pepperweed. One of the main aspects about this one that is a problem is it's very rhizomatous, meaning it grows a huge root system, and it's really difficult to control. It takes multiple, if you're going to use herbicide, there's really no other means to control this other than an herbicide. You can't go dig this one out because it has such a large root system. Once it gets established, it takes 2 to 3 years to really control this thing, spraying it 3 or 4 times a year. And so for those reasons, these are why we call these noxious weeds, and there's such an issue for the state of Nevada and any other state, really. But because they are so difficult to control, and the resources that go into controlling these things are astronomical once you get an infestation that looks like this. So perennial pepper we really view as being that could be a potential threat for Story County. There is some in Story County right now. I've seen some along C Street, just in Virginia City, and along Lockwood. In Lockwood, it's just following the river all the way down as it goes into Pyramid Lake. So this is definitely concern that one that we're concerned about. Yellow star thistle. This is another serious issue. This one it takes over complete landscapes. It completely disrupts the native vegetation system, and becomes the only plant that's really in that community that you will end up finding. It's a really thorny plant, so it's really difficult to get through. It's fairly easy to control, but it takes over, and it's a prolific seed producer. And the big issue with this one is we do have it in down in the Reno area, and it's one of the only areas that we really have it in Nevada right now, but it can be easily transported this way too, just, you know, along with any means that weeds transport. But this one also causes neurological damage to horses. It creates a disease called chewing disease. And when it does, when the horses graze upon this one, it causes a neurological problem in their brain, and they don't eat or drink, and it can starve a horse to death. So these are some of the reasons why we have noxious weeds listed, and we try our best to try to keep them out of the state. Medusa head, as I mentioned, is our next cheatgrass that we're very concerned about. It is a winter annual, just like cheatgrass, which means it gets a head start in front of all of our other native plants. This one actually germinates a lot earlier than all of our natives, just like cheatgrass does. So it's the first thing that you normally see greening up in the spring. It also will green in the fall if it has a chance to. So it outcompetes all of our natives. It steals all those resources in the soil before our natives can get up and going. It has a high silica content, which is the same thing that you find in sand. So because of that, it does not break down in the environment. So it creates this, really, and I don't know how easily these pictures are kind of small, how easily everybody can see it, but it creates this thick, dense mass that does not break down year to year. And so it just continually builds this mat of plant material that is dry, you know, in our summer months when we go through our rainy season or whatever else. And we have those thunderstorms, and it's just fuel. It's just a major fire potential. And we have somewhere near 10,000 acres in Nevada right now that are infested with Medusa head, and it spreads just as easy as tree grass does. And so, and it loves fire. For those reasons, this is another one that we really are concerned with, especially for Story County, because there's such a large infestation just down in Reno. So this one could easily transport up this way. I talked about Dalmatian toadflax a second ago. It's actually a really pretty plant. It looks like a wild snapdragon. But again, it is one of these ones that has this extensive root system. It takes over complete landscapes. And then once it takes over, nothing else can really get into that place. And so for those reasons, this is something that we're trying to keep out of our natural settings. There is an infestation down in Gold Hill. I've been working since 2007 on doing a biocontrol effort on this one, where we've released an insect native to the country where this plant came from that only eats this plant. It will not distribute over to any other plants. It only eats this one, and once it eats itself out of house and home, it goes away. But it's been controlling this one pretty good down in Gold Hill, but we're definitely keeping a close eye on that to make sure that this one doesn't get out of hand. Some of the other ones that are an issue for Story County, this one's called hoary cress. It is actually just a smaller version of the perennial pepperweed, the one up in the top left corner. This one, they call it small white top. Same issues that the other white top possessed, just it is very, very ominous, and it takes over complete landscapes, as you can see in the picture. And then the other one, this was one that you probably have seen quite a bit here in Virginia City or elsewhere. It's called scotch thistle. This is an immature plant. When it actually gets to full height, it can get to about 12 feet tall. This is that really thorny thing that you see kind of around town. It has purple flowers, kind of looks like a purple sunflower. That is also listed as a noxious weed just because it's a really nasty weed when you have to approach it, and it can actually take over full landscapes too. In Verdi, we've got scotch thistle forests where you can't even get through it on a horse or anything else like that. So those are some of the main species of concern. As I said, we've got 47 of them that are listed. Not all 47 actually are here in Nevada at this point, but we're trying our best to keep them out of Nevada, but some of them are. Current noxious weed efforts that are going on right now in Story County. From 2010 on, We've, our Department of Agriculture has actually, we've put $15,000 towards the Story County Conservation District and in conjunction with the Washoe County Conservation District just on noxious weed-related control efforts to, you know, try to, you know, control those weeds that we can find and do a little bit of outreach and education to various groups. We also give money to the Dayton Valley Conservation District. They actually do a lot of treatments up 6 and 7 Mile Canyon just because of their concerns of the weed issues that are up those canyons coming back down into Lyon County. So we've given money to them, and they've actually put that money that we've given them to come into Story County and actually try to control some of the stuff that you guys have here. And don't get me wrong, Story County actually doesn't have a huge noxious weed issue right now. You're actually one of the cleaner counties that we have throughout the state, so kudos to you there. But we're, you know, these are always definitely issues that, you know, concerns that we have that, you know, that the ones that are established and that you do have at this time, that they could, you know, really become an issue and a problem further down the road, if not controlled. My office has received a number of complaints from residents within Story County and elsewhere, and from other weed groups that deal with noxious weeds. And I've been working with a number of residents here in Virginia City, mainly off of C Street, to control some of the noxious weed issues. Typically, I get a call or I'll get a letter from, you know, one resident and say, "Hey, my neighbor's got such and such weed, and it's coming over onto my property." And I'll get into a little bit about how I work with landowners to control their noxious weeds in the next couple of slides. And as I mentioned, you know, we've been doing some biocontrol efforts on the Dalmatian toad flax in Gold Hill, and we're looking to do a couple other biocontrol releases on some other things. But there's definitely room for more activity and more collaboration, and work is needed to really keep the noxious weeds at bay here in Story County and throughout Nevada. So I was going to go over some of the noxious weed regulations that we have in statute, just to kind of give you a perspective of what my job is, how I go about doing it, and what some of the county responsibilities are as far as noxious weeds. So the first, and I'm going to read these out just so the members of the audience can hear them too, because it's kind of hard to see some of the screen probably in the far back. So I'm going to start with all of our weed regulations fall under NRS Chapter 555. And so the first one I wanted to mention here is .150. Every landowner, occupier, whether private, city, county, or federal, shall control all noxious weeds. So essentially, it's everybody's issue to control the noxious weeds on their lands. There are no exceptions. Even the federal landowners, they have no exceptions. They have to control the weeds that are on their property as well, and those are the ones that are listed in that book. They are obligated. Every landowner is obligated to control the noxious weeds on their property.
So, is there a penalty on that if you don't?
And that's where we're going. Yeah, there is not an actual fine on it, but this is where things can kind of go south. So, .160 states that the state quarantine officer may serve notice upon the owner or occupant to control noxious weeds on their property. So, essentially, what happens is I get a complaint or I get a notice, or just upon a survey that, you know, our office or other people do, we find noxious weeds on any type of property. We try not to be heavy-handed. I mean, we are, you know, it is our charge to regulate and, you know, enforce the laws in Nevada, but, you know, there's so much outreach and education that needs to happen. There's a lot of landowners that don't understand or even know that we have these laws regarding noxious weeds, that I try to run this program as a more of an outreach and educational opportunity to let people inform people about the noxious weed laws and what these weeds could do if you have them on their property and how devastating they can actually be, and work with those property owners to control those weeds. So essentially, once I become aware of a noxious weed infestation, I will contact the property owner. Typically, I just try to do it in person if I can, but being that it's a statewide program, it's really difficult to contact every landowner in person. If I can't contact them in person, I will send a hello letter. Hey, did you know that you've got this on your property? By the way, these are the laws that we have. I would love to work with you on controlling the weeds on your property. Here are a number of control groups that we have in the state of Nevada that can maybe give you some help, and you know, please contact me. We'll see how we can get this noxious weed issue solved. I will send a series of those, two to three, to a landowner to try to, you know, get their cooperation and bring them in compliance with the weed laws to get the weeds controlled. If I do not, what did I have there? And in that notice, basically, I've got it stated, you know, I state which weeds they have, give them a little bit of background on those weeds and why they're so detrimental to the landscape. I give them some means for control, how they can control them, and then I give them I require a timeline of when they should contact me. That just gives me, lets me know that, hey, I haven't been contacted, and I can, you know, try to recontact this person or this landowner. Once I have either compliance isn't reached because no action has been taken, or I'm basically just ignored by a landowner, that's when the county, that's when I will get involved with the counties. And this is something that I want to talk to you guys a little bit about today. Is once I've sent out three letters, state statute 170 says, should the occupant, owner or occupant fail to comply, the state quarantine officer may notify the Board of County Commissioners for the county in which the property is situated. So what I would basically do is come to the county commission and say, hey, this is all I've tried to do with this landowner. I've tried to work with them to control their weeds. We have to control these weeds. I'm charged to control the weeds in the state of Nevada. I need your help at this point. And what we would do then is go into an abatement process. We've tried to contact this landowner. They have resisted or have just, you know, failed to comply with the law. And we will go into an abatement process where we enter upon the land and we control the noxious weeds on that property. And again, like I said, you know, we have a number of weeds. We have a set of categories. I don't try to control every noxious weed across the state. If it's a C category weed, it's an area that's highly infested. I'm not going to throw the hammer at everybody just because, you know, everybody's got it. That's not what I'm looking to do. I'm just trying to control those that we actually can get a handle on before they become a big outbreak. So if it gets to the point where we had to go do an abatement on the property, that abatement then, we will bill the landowner for the control costs to go onto that property and control those weeds. And then if the landowner then refuses to pay the cost for that abatement, the county Board of Commissioners shall proceed to have the abatement. NRS 180 then would go into effect. Control costs not paid by the owner shall be placed as a lien. A lien shall be placed on the property to collect those the cost and control costs. And so that's where my program would want to work with the counties to do that. I know that, you know, this costs money, and I'm going to send this around to you guys really quick. This is not an action item, and I know I just want to talk to you guys today. This is just something I want to have you guys take a look at, and I'll pass this out again here.
Thank you.
We have in the Department of Agriculture, we have a fund that is has been designated just to control noxious weeds in the state. We are to use that with the counties to help pay for the cost of controlling weeds on property. And so what I've passed out to you today is just this MOU. This is only in draft form at this point. I would really love to get your feedback. I'd love you guys to just review it, take a look at it, see what you think about it. See if this is something that you'd be willing to or would want to get to go into with me on. This has already been approved by Douglas County. We're actually going to start signing these MOUs with Douglas County this spring to get some noxious weed work done on properties that have been completely infested and no work has been done for the last couple of years. But essentially what this is where we can go in together to perform an abatement on properties, and if the county will agree to place the lien on a property, if that property owner does not pay for the control costs, the state will actually will front up to 80% of the cost associated with controlling that on the abatement, as long as a lien is placed and is collected upon. We will front that money. Yes.
So I noticed a lot of the wetlands that are actually controlled by the Corps of Engineers or the federal government are some of the worst offenders for whitetop.
Most definitely.
And so how would you go about a control? Can't really place a lien against that property. So what is your, what's your policy with the federal plan?
And that's always the fun one. So federal, the federal government is not, they have to abide by all the same rules that we do. So our office can actually, can go on to federal, you know, we'll go through the same chain of operations that we did with, you know, any other landowner in the state, you know, where we'll send them letters saying, hey, you need to control your noxious weeds, you know, and give them a deadline and a timeline to do it. And if they do not control their noxious weeds, then we can actually enter onto federal ground and perform that abatement. We can then bill the federal government, and that's where it gets kind of tricky. It's kind of up to the federal government if they want to pay us back or not.
Are any of these weeds considered wetland species?
Most definitely.
Well, a wetland species is going to be protected in a wetland if it's a federally controlled wetland, correct?
The wetland species of noxious weeds?
It's a wetland plant in a wetland designated area that the federal government owns under the Corps of Engineers. A wetland plant may not be disturbed even if it's a noxious weed.
No, not correct. If it's listed in the state of Nevada as a noxious weed, nobody can claim, well, it's in our wetland or anything else. If it's a, it's listed, and each state has its own set of noxious weeds, but if it's listed in Nevada, nobody can have it on their property, regardless of their federal, state, private, anybody else. So, no, they don't have the right to say, no, it's in our wetland, you can't control it. But getting back to your first question, getting the federal government to pay for their abatement, that's the fun part. But you know, I don't think the federal government wants to have a black eye if we bill them for work that they didn't do on their land. You know, that's going to become a tricky situation when we get into that. As I said, you know, this is something that we're really just starting to try to, you know, get our feet wet on and work with the federal government and the different counties to go towards. But anyway, this abatement was just a way, and I didn't really want to focus on the abatements and everything else. Really, our program is aimed at more outreach education and working with landowners to get weeds controlled. But this MOU has been accepted by Douglas County. We are going to start doing abatements, like I said, this spring, and we will be able to front the money because it's kind of an unfunded mandate. If I came to the county and said, yeah, well, county, here's X, Y, and Z landowners. You guys need to have all this work done on these property. Where are you guys going to find the funds to, you know, actually go about doing that? So this is a way that we could front the money on that and then collect upon it when the lien is collected on.
So this, in fact, is a new program.
It's a new program, yes. And so that's why it's only in draft format right now. I'd really love to get feedback from your guys' district attorney, from you guys in general, to see if this is something that you guys, you know, would be interested in. And, you know, I'm not looking to, you know, our program is not looking to do abatements on everybody in the state of Nevada that has noxious weeds. That's not what we're looking to do. But this is just a way that, you know, if we can't get compliance, we can actually control the weeds that need to be controlled.
I have one comment.
Please.
This is the first state agency that's ever come in here and said, will help fund your unfunded mandate. So I wish the rest of the state entities would take a similar approach.
Well, it's a big issue, and we understand that, you know, that, you know, everybody's funding and everybody's budgets have been, you know, drastically hit over the last number of years and everything like that. And so this is just something. We have this fund set aside that we've had it set aside since 2003, and we haven't actually been able to use them. And so we wanted to get out and see how we could use these funds. And so this is something we've worked with our DAG with, and with Douglas County and a couple other counties, you know, trying to get the wording right and everything else. But again, I would love to get your guys' input on it and, you know, see if this is something that you guys would be interested in. I've still got a couple other slides, but I'd like to move on. But if you have some other questions, I'd entertain those questions, most definitely. Okay.
Go right ahead.
So just to kind of tie the rest of the presentation up, I guess, as some of the future directions to explore when it comes to noxious weed control with, you know, partnering with us or just for Torrey County in general, would be explore options for creating the creation of a county weed district or a county weed program. Your guys' county commission can actually by state statute, and the state statute right here, 555-202, create an organized weed district. We have about five or six of them in the state. There's one in Paradise Valley. There's also one in Diamond Valley. There's one on the Walker River. There's one in Lovelock Valley. So we have a number of weed districts, in which these are just a a weed district is a county entity that reserves not, uh, that uh, reserves noxious weed regulatory powers and has the responsibility to control noxious weeds in the district area. So you guys can essentially pick an area, you know, and create a boundary of it, and all the weeds are controlled within that district. But again, that comes to county funds and where you're going to get the money to do stuff like that. And so I understand that that could be an issue. You can actually, it doesn't have to be one area. A weed district can be on a county-wide level. The whole county could be within a weed district. Nevada is actually the only western state that does not have weed districts. All of our neighboring states have a weed district per county, they are kind of the regulatory and get out there and do all the weed work within their counties. Nevada is a little bit far behind as far as building an infrastructure for weed control, and we are also one of the only counties that does, or one of the only states that does not have any funding going towards noxious weed control from legislature or from the general funds. So that is one of the things that my program and other people are working on to get legislature to release some of the money that they've got in general funds or everything else, so we can actually build this infrastructure in our state to help counties and residents and landowners control noxious weeds throughout Nevada. And I already kind of covered that. And weed districts, you know, we're trying to get these established, and, you know, these would just be a really good first step to creating some type of infrastructure for noxious weed control. Douglas County, actually, they don't have a weed, they used to be a weed district, but they became just a county entity, a county program, and they cover the whole county, and they've got a weed program that is phenomenal, actually. They cover their whole county, and they've got, you know, a crew of about five or six people with some equipment, and they go out and they control all the weeds, for the most part, in their county as best they can. And I go over some other things that are working in that county, and that can also work in this county as well. Some of the other future directions, supporting local weed control efforts and reestablishing, there used to be a Story County Cooperative Weed Management Association, and essentially these are volunteer groups that are comprised of agency folk and also just, you know, local residents or any number of people that come together and look at the issues of noxious weeds in a certain area and how they can kind of pool their resources and their time and funding and whatever else they can to control noxious weeds in a certain area. Like I said, there used to be one here in Story County, but when the funding kind of went down all around, we couldn't help support them anymore, and they lost a couple of number of their grants. They went by the wayside, but, you know, it would be a good idea if we could hopefully try to get another cooperative weed management area started. Some of the other things we could think about, went a little too far. One of the other things you could think about, you know, if funding is an issue, and it isn't anywhere, there are, like the Dayton Valley Weed Conservation District, the one that works, you know, out of Lyon County, they already have all the equipment, and they've got all the labor and everything else like that. You know, with a little bit of, you know, with a little bit of funding, you know, they could actually, wouldn't mind, you know, coming up into Story County, and if you guys would pay, you know, to pay for the labor for the day and, you know, for the chemical use, they would be more than willing to help you guys control some of your weeds. So if you couldn't fund a whole district or, you know, create your own weed program, there are neighboring entities that, you know, could be looked at to help fund and control noxious weeds in this area as well. And then, you know, some of the other things, you just, you know, as this program gets going a little bit more and we interact a little bit more, you just maintain regular communication between state, county, and local organizations regarding noxious weeds in this area. You know, communication is vital when it comes to noxious weeds and getting a lot more people out there, you know, kind of eyeing them and getting out there and looking for them. If we can control it when it's one weed as opposed to 16 acres of weeds, it's a huge difference when it comes to, you know, the control costs for keeping those in check. And this is just my last slide. It's kind of, you know, a funny cartoon that we found. But it kind of drives the message home a little bit. You know, I mentioned, you know, if we can control these weeds when they're small, when we first start seeing them, when we have just this first infestation, it really makes a big difference when they get out of hand and they're the ones that end up controlling us. And all of our resources, all of our time, everything is devoted to trying to control something that would have taken $1,000 or $100 or one person with one shovel 10 minutes to control that weed the first time it was introduced, as opposed to look at Reno now with the perennial pepperweed infestation. We don't have the millions and millions of dollars that it would cost to actually control the perennial pepperweed infestation that we have in Reno now. But this is just something, you know, that I really try to drive home is, you know, if we can do it, if we get a program going now before we get these huge issues, it's going to save us so much money in the long run. And so that's essentially my presentation. I would, you know, we'd love to entertain any questions that you guys have or anything like that.
What department would you typically communicate with within the county if you're going to increase the communication effort?
I can answer. We've already got channels open with Austin's office, Austin and Desi. He's the subject matter expert with the Dayton group every year, so he's our boots on the ground.
So, yeah, and, you know, I don't know too many of the departments that you guys actually have here in Story County, because each county kind of has different departments. In Washoe County, we work with the Parks and Rec and Open Space. In Douglas County, they have, like, their own weed program, so it just kind of depends on which program you guys would have to dedicated for outreach and education and doing, you know, general maintenance and cleanup and stuff like that. So
our wild horse population does a pretty good job of the weed abatement.
They do for the most part, but those, like I said, like those ones that are really herbaceous are the ones that have big root systems. You know, it's a grazing thing where it just keeps coming back year after year. And actually, when you chew down some of these noxious weed ones that have huge root systems, it actually spurs more growth than they take off. So we've got some issues when it comes to that. And some of them, like I said, are actually very poisonous to livestock and grazing animals and stuff like that. So, but yeah, the wild horses aren't there. They do a number on them. So.
Well, I guess the good news you brought us is that Story County has very little problem right now.
Compared to some of the other counties, most definitely.
Good.
It's 12 o'clock.
Excellent. So, any other questions that I can answer or anything like that?
Yeah. Great.
Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate
Thanks
it.
Thanks for your presentation.
Cool.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'm going to move along here to item 14. Discussion and possible action, the approval of interlocal agreement between the Aging and Disability Division of the County of Story for provision of children's development services. And Robin Williams today, is that correct?
That's correct.
All right.
Hey, good afternoon. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the Commission. I am Robin Williams. I'm the program manager for Rural Regional Center. And with me is Rob Forder-Hayes, who is our administrative services officer. Rural Regional Center is an agency within the Division of Aging and Developmental Services, which provides services and supports to individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities throughout the rural counties of Nevada. So today, we are here to discuss the interlocal contract between ADSD, the Aging and Developmental Services Division, and Story County, which outlines the services and payment for services for children who live in Story County. So I'm going to let Mr. Forder-Hayes discuss the contract, and then we'll be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Hi, Robert Forder-Hayes, ADSD. Just to add, this agreement is authorized by NRS 435.010 and .020. The total amount of the contract for the 2 years is $6,000. The amount that was billed in FY13 was $2,838. And so far this year for FY14, we've billed $513.16. I anticipate that the total cost for FY14 will probably be between $1,000 and $1,500 for the year. If you have any questions, we have to answer them.
Did I understand this program started in July of last year? Is that what
This was initially authorized by the 2010-2011 legislature. It's actually been in place for fiscal years 12-13 and now proposed for 14-15.
So are you asking us today to sign a number of contracts that weren't furnished at the time? Is that what I'm understanding?
The contracts for this fiscal year starting July 1st were mailed out back in June and July. There's been some difficulty getting them through the process, getting them approved, but it's for services going back to July 1st of 2013.
And Mr. Gilman, if I can address that without sounding critical or harsh, as a result of not the 2013 session but the 2011 session, the county was hit with a massive number of unfunded mandates, if you will, services that have been previously performed or provided by the state, either now subject the county to, in some cases, full payment, or in other cases, partial payment, anywhere from the parole and probation reviews that are done on district court convictions, environmental health services, you know, the county's now having to pay. And this was yet another one of those, albeit with a small price tag, and I'm very glad to hear that, where unfortunately we've had a hell of a time getting anybody to sit down with us and say, what is this and what do we get for it? How much is it going to cost? So that's why since June of 13 there's been no responses. My office gets mailed a stack of five contracts and says, here, approve this. It's like, that's not the way we do business. So I'm glad you've taken the time to come up today and generally explain the services, and I am appreciative of the fact that, you know, you estimate high and charge low. So this is,
yeah, I anticipate the charges will be no more than $2,000 for the, probably $1,500 for this year.
$1,500 for what?
For a year for the services they provide to our developmentally disabled.
Developmentally disabled children living in Story County.
Yes.
Have you identified how many children are here in Story County that are part of the program?
I believe we have two currently.
Yeah, we actually, at this today, there is one child. I don't believe we've ever had more than two children in Story County during the time. And it could change, but I wouldn't anticipate it would be 2 to 20. I just couldn't imagine that that would happen.
How does the child qualify? How are they identified as requiring the program?
We receive referrals from the school district, from early intervention, and from families themselves. In order to qualify for services through the regional center, an individual must have a diagnosis during what they call the developmental period, which is why it's called developmental services, which is under age 22. So before age 22, the child either must have a diagnosis of mental retardation, which is the most common type of developmental disability, or a diagnosis of a what we call a related condition, which would be probably the one that you would be most familiar with would be autism.
Sure.
That you could have autism and not have, in order to have mental retardation, your IQ must be 70 or below. An average IQ is 100. So you could have a person whose IQ is 120, but they have autism, so their support needs are similar to that of a person with mental retardation, and that they're going to require supports probably throughout their life to maintain in their home, to manage their money, to shop, to do the kinds of typical things that we do every day. So there is actually a very technical eligibility process that goes through, and what I've given you is a very small piece of it. We assess information that's done by professionals to determine eligibility.
So this was a legislative requirement that was passed to the county that we are to fund and maintain and manage, and it's costing $1,500 per year for one child?
Right now it's only, in the past there were, I believe, two children. And you have the cost that it was then.
For FY13, the amount billed was $2,838. I'm not sure how many children that actually served.
I believe it was about two.
I recall two. For perspective, could one of you, you know, this is one, Commissioner Gilman, where our size works in our favor. Maybe you can just, without getting into Washoe County, I mean, that's a beast of its own, but maybe Lyon, Carson, and Douglas, could you give us some estimate as to what those counties might have to pay?
I'll let you do that.
Well, some counties that you mentioned are paying upwards of probably $40,000 per year.
Yeah, I've talked to my counterparts. I know all of us were this is only one, and this is one of the lowest cost ones, quite frankly, for, you know, for us.
So we're lucky and it's not optional.
Yeah, pretty much. And again, it is a good service. One of my counterparts has a child that I have reason to believe would be eligible to participate in this program, and it's a lifesaver for the family. It really is. So I'm glad you came to talk to me.
Is this a set fee, or is it on a sliding scale depending on how many children participate in the program?
You want to address that? Go ahead.
No, it's... I'm sorry. Can you repeat the question?
Is this a fixed fee you're asking for, or is this on a sliding scale depending on how many children? I think you said somewhere between $1,500 and $2,000. Is it $1,500, or is it $2,000, or is it on a sliding scale depending on how many children?
No, it's not on a sliding scale, but you have to qualify, and actually the county can set that, whether it's 200% of poverty or 300% of poverty. So yeah, the rates are set.
And services vary.
Correct.
Based on the individuality of who they're working with. So some will be very intensive and require more time and money, and others were, you know, they're more or less a helping hand. Correct.
Right. You would always expect, we are mandated by NRS to provide 4 meetings with the family per year. So that would be a billable service that we would pass on to the counties. So that would, we also, if we are asked to go assist with the school or to coordinate service, that would also be part of the service we provide. Our goal is really to work with families and children at a younger age so that when they become adults, they don't require those intensive level of services. So it's kind of, you know, the penny wise, pound foolish. You hope to pay for it early and save, frankly, sometimes millions of dollars with taking care of the person when they're an adult.
Okay. And if I understand this correctly, help me along with this. You're asking us to approve an interlocal agreement with you. We don't know how much it's going to cost us on the interim.
That's correct.
Okay.
So, Pat, my understanding is this is not an optional decision on behalf of this commission.
I would hazard to guess, and I defer to legal counsel who haven't seen the agreement either.
I guess we can't ask for staff recommendation on this one.
I would have a tendency to say you're absolutely right, Commissioner Gilman. And again, I want to keep in mind everybody, every one of these, and it isn't these guys' fault. You know, it's our legislators. I'll call it what it is. And it's the condition the state found itself in 2 sessions ago. We don't know how many parole and pre-sentence investigations we're going to do. We don't know how many new businesses are going to come and need a health and environmental inspection from the state. The state will pay 80% and we pay 20%. So really with any of them, we don't have a precise dollar.
Well, a different program than this. This is a specific program, correct? But your district.
Well, I mean, this one as well. I guess what I'm doing is giving you an analysis really on any of these
unfounded mandates that come from our state legislature.
Yes, that there were cost shifting, basically. The state used to pick all this.
There's a motion and no second.
I don't know. It's somewhat entertaining to me. I don't even know why they made you come up here. If the legislature has shoved something down our throat, we have to.
That would be me, because, again, I didn't want to sign a contract that you just didn't have at least knowledge and explanation of the programs and what they do.
Well, Bill has planted his feet in the ground.
Okay. Well,
I'd really like to see some kind of numbers, I mean, before we do this.
Well, it's not going to break the bank, so it's not like we're crawling uphill on something. And if we're in violation of state legislation, I'm not sure what the realities of that may or may not be. So although it doesn't chew well, I'm sure with any county or anybody, you know, to approve an unfounded mandate and you have no idea how much it might cost your voters, that's a...
Well, why don't you throw a motion out there and...
Oh, yeah. Let's see. I guess we accept public comment on this.
Yes, and I kind of like to lead that. I, I won't take exception with violation of state law. How about defiance of state law for a short term? I think, you know, we've sent our message, and understand in terms of actual numbers, I could only presume to guess that you guys must have 52 federal regulations on privacy acts, HIPAA, everything like that, you know, that you're subject to. So we're never going to drill into much of anything other than I think what this gentleman has provided is a ballpark estimate. We've got Hugh and Jesse that watch these numbers and these charges on a regular basis. In fact, three or four budget years ago, we took all of our unfunded mandates and lumped them all into four, five, six different line items within one department, I believe, administration. Yeah. So we are tracking these as unfunded mandates.
So I want you all to know, I'm not insensitive to the needs of the children. That works really well in my world. And so that's not really the issue. But then when you sit here, and I realize it's a couple of $1,000s, but when you sit here and you struggle with a county budget and all the county services we must provide, and we have something here we're going to be asked to vote on and approve, and we really don't know how much it might be at the end of the time. It's I really don't have a motion, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman, before I ask for one, I think we had somebody in the audience that, for public comment. Somebody have public comment on this? Come on up, Ms. House, to the podium.
Maybe Janet's got an idea for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with Mr. Commissioner Lance's comment, and I think we should know. Get more deeper understanding regularly, on the matter itself before we commit anything, especially our budget itself, our financial, is a bit tight. I have not, in marketing area, we need a lot of things, and I have not get any, the residents has not get anything at all. So I'm hoping, I'm not against the insurance or aging itself, but I'm for it, but of course we have to find out more details on that basis. If there's regulations compulsory, then we have to follow, but we still have to know what is our expenditures on that basis. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've restated exactly what I've said. We've got a ballpark range. We will monitor it, and relative to services not being provided in Mark Twain, that's an irrelevant statement, because this child that is currently being served or children in the past could very well be from the Mark Twain area. So,
or anywhere in the county.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Thank you. Any other comments out there?
For what it's worth, staff would recommend approval of this.
I wonder if we threw out a dollar cap on this thing. For instance, if it hits X number of dollars annually, that we bring it back onto the agenda again for discussion. Or, I mean, is there a
If I could make a respectful suggestion, knowing that this document is the result of the State Attorney General's office and is being reluctantly approved by commissions all over the state, I would suggest we approve it as is rather than try to amend it with direction from the commission to our fiscal staff that we monitor expenses, and if we do exceed the $2,000 threshold or something.
Can we put a fuse on it? Mr. Manager, can we fuse it to 1 year with a revisitation, or is it, what's the timeline? Did it look to me like 2015?
Well, June of 2015. So for all intents and purposes, you know, we're going retroactive from July of 13 through this coming June of 14, very shortly. This amount, particularly with the items that this team has provided us today, will be go ahead and factor into that budget as one of those line items for for this particular agreement. You know, we'll probably budget $2,000 or whatever you would like us to set, and therefore it would be incorporated into the.
So our total commitment here is to June of 2015, is that correct?
That's
it doesn't extend beyond.
That's correct, yes.
Without.
Yeah, so you're basically looking at slightly over.
You'd be coming back with a new MOU at that point.
Well, I don't know. Does the legislature actually mandate through 2015 or
forever?
Forever.
It's through 2015, but I anticipate there not being an end, that it'll continue on.
But that'll be something for us to lobby for back there.
Exactly, yes.
Well, we have the option, too, of going down and discussing this with the legislature come next February anyway, so.
Correct.
I'll be happy to go down there and discuss it.
Well, in the interest of the meeting and in the interest of moving on based upon the amount that's at risk, but making my concerns known here at the table, I will make a motion to approve the interlocal agreement between the Aging and Disability Division and the County of Story for provision of children's developmental services. There you have it. It's on the table.
Okay, I'll second that.
Okay, it's moved in second. We have someone else that has a comment. Come on up.
I'm concerned how this issue got here. We've got lobbyists that we're paying over hundreds of thousands of dollars to every year, and they go down there and sit in there and listen. Why aren't they bringing this issues back and say, hey, guys, this is where we're jammed up. We've got to get a grassroots movement to stop this unfunded mandate, whatever it is. I don't care whether it's these folks or whoever. But where are these lobbyists we've got, and why aren't you people up to date on what has been going on and why it's going on, and how do we stop it?
Thank you. Before we vote, I just want to ask you one more question, because it's going to be over. I'm sure you've come across this at other county commissioner meetings where people have shown objections to this, have you not?
This is actually the first county commission meeting that I've attended.
Oh, is that right?
And myself
okay.
Also, yes.
Welcome okay. to Story County.
Okay.
Let me follow it up. What's the end result if the county were to go ahead and deny approving an MOU?
We would refer that on to our deputy attorney general. It would become a legal issue. It would. It's not our issue.
They show up as handcuffs.
Yeah. I don't know.
You're just the messenger. And
we're
I
just the messenger.
We're sensitive to that. Got it.
Okay. 100%. We're not going to take any more of your time.
Okay.
And for the record, we did lobby heavily against all unfunded mandates and lost. And what sometimes gets lost is the perspective. The unfunded mandates was a much better solution than what Clark County contingency was looking to do to us.
All right. Very good. We have a motion and a second to approve the MOU.
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you for attending today.
I'll bet this is going to turn into some interesting stories as it goes through.
You're welcome to share how we feel.
Okay, next item we have community development and planning.
I will take that one, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Gets a little more complex today, as Sheriff Antonaro pointed out. We have three different actions on the three different items appearing for licensing. First, we would like to recommend you continue the Mustang Ranch Mercantile, item C. You want me to keep going?
Just item C.
We'd like that one continued, please.
Continue. Okay, motion to continue C.
We have a second.
Second.
We moved to second to continue C. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you, gentlemen. We'd ask that you approve item A, Aero Automatic Sprinkler Company.
Okay, motion to approve item A.
Second.
And B?
No, just A.
Oh, just A? Oh, I'm sorry. Just A? Okay, it's been moved to second to approve item A. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Okay. And on item B, I believe we are recommending no action. And again, I'll explain. The Mustang Ranch Emporium is also the steakhouse and the bar, the same item appearing under the consent agenda. As item 9.
Okay.
And it'll be under Mustang Retailers. Correct?
Well, we're working through all that. Yeah. Once a liquor license came into play by our practice, we are a one-stop shop. So the previous licenses that had been submitted to Dean's office and Stacy moved over to Sheriff Antonaro, and it's now his and Chris's, you know, good fortune to try to figure this out and get her done. So no action on that item.
So B simply moves back up to 9A, correct?
There's no action today on that one. We'll get it.
Okay. Very good. Okay. Item 16. Now, we have public comment. And Pat, if you'll start with public comment, please.
I will. Thank you.
I debated whether to do this during staff report because I know I'm going to get criticized, but I opted to take the public comment route. And I would do this for Mr. Purcell is in here. His business has been recognized frequently by the county as one of the marquee businesses in town. The one thing Virginia City needs, our area needs, both for our tourists and locals and anybody, you know, are quality restaurants. And this is really a shameless plug for a newly opened restaurant and saloon that opened up Friday evening. And I will tell you, if you're hungry at all for a great steak, you need to try out the Mustang Ranch Steakhouse and Saloon. It's got great food, greatly run by not so much Lance, but by Donnie and his whole team. The food is outstanding. The prices are phenomenally good for Virginia City prices or for anywhere, steakhouse prices. So I wanted to compliment you and thank you for opening up yet another great business on the Comstock. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Under public comment, the next person I'd like to come up and speak is Ron James. Good afternoon, Mr. James. It's always a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. For the record, Ron James, the Executive Director of the Comstock Foundation for History and Culture. I just want to let you know and everyone in the audience that we'll be having a reception open to the public, and even you guys could show up, on April 4th, Friday, at 5 o'clock at the Gold Hill Hotel to celebrate the completion of the restoration of the Upper Yellow Jacket Hoist Works, which is the hoist that's right above the B&T tracks, right above the Gold Hill Hotel. And I believe we'll be finished by then. Every time we've tried to finish it over these winter months, it's snowed or blown so hard that no one could be up there. But it looks like we're just about ready to finish it, and it's time to celebrate that. And we will be trying to raise funds for 9 different Comstock nonprofit organizations and the Story County Library also. So we'll be putting jars out there to raise funds for those organizations, and the foundation will match it one-to-one up to $1,000 each. So it's such a deal, and so bring quarters and put them into the jars. Okay?
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. James.
Thank you.
What was that date again? April 4th, right? Yeah, 5 o'clock. Thanks.
All right. We'll continue on with public comment. Okay. Ms. Dean? Come on down.
I'm Kay Dean, Virginia City Highlands. It was good to hear you guys debating the issues about spending $2,000, and I think I may have found a solution for your problem, because I think I found a $10,000 expense you won't have to pay anymore. That'll fund it for 5 years. In the February 18th meeting, Chairman McBride stated that the Jeep Posse is getting money because they have a contract. And I asked about the contract, and I was told this was not a question-answer session. So I have spent the last month going to the courthouse and getting the actual documents myself to educate myself about this area. I went and asked for a copy of this contract everybody referred to. I was given document one, which is a basically recording of a receipt of money. And it says it's a Jeep Posse lease payment to Story County. It's dated in 1992 and acknowledges that the Story County received $99 for payment in full for this 99-year lease. Interestingly enough, the document dated 92 will end in 2071. They didn't even get the 99 years right. They put 79 years in it. So the other is the grant of easement, which also contained the cell phone contracts. I looked through all of those. All of the documents are between Story County, who is considered a municipal corporation, a government agency, the landlord, the owner, or grantor. There are absolutely no references in any document to the Jeep Posse anywhere. Thus, the representations made by the county over these past several years that the Jeep Posse is receiving these funds because of a contract is not true. Now, I understand when someone comes into a position, you're told many times something exists, you rely on that statement as documentation. However, I have now brought you the documentation and evidence that this is not the case, there is no contract, and Story County has absolutely no legal obligation to pay the Jeep Posse anything. Now, regarding any future funding in the Jeep Posse, there's multiple reasons this is problematic. Beginning in 2006, we began paying the Jeep Posse each quarter, and it started out at $6,000 a year. It's now up to $10,000 a year. They've received almost $67,000 since 2006. They are not a 501c3. Until this status is achieved, no more funding should be done. They have not filed income tax returns. And beginning in 2007, even 501c3 organizations were required to file, at the minimum, a Form 990N. This has not been done. Therefore, they are not a nonprofit under the IRS. They have to file tax returns and pay the tax amount due. They will owe taxes on all the funds Story County has given them, the $67,000 I mentioned, in addition to all the other revenue that they have received ever, because they have never been a nonprofit, according to the IRS. This is a tax disaster waiting to happen, and Story County would be very well advised to disassociate itself with this group. Because the Jeep Posse has represented itself as a nonprofit, but they were not legally one under federal law. It's possible fraud's been committed. The Jeep Posse operated a bar for years without a liquor license. Documents were signed by Greg Hess and Pat Whitten in 2008 regarding the cell towers, with no disclosure that they were members of this group that was given half the money the county was receiving. Scholarships were given to students that did not graduate from our high school in direct violation of the Jeep Posse's own requirements as to whom receives money. Each year, the newspaper articles cite that all proceeds benefit high school students in the form of college scholarship. Based on the limited financial information I was had access to, I believe it's statistically impossible for this to be true. In the April 2010 minutes in community service section, it states that the Jeep Posse funding has been left at last year's level, since this line item is tied directly to revenue from the cell tower sublease, which remains stable. There's no documents to corroborate this that the county has. This appears to be totally false. This representation was made as if it was fact at a county commissioner meeting. There are multiple references over the last several years that there represents as fact that the Jeep Posse has a contract with Story County. This is not true, and I would like the commission to acknowledge and make it officially in their record that there is no contract with Jeep Posse and has not been. I do not believe you should continue to give money to a group that appears to be in grave violation of many federal regulations. And I hope that the residents of Story County take notice. Instead of using these funds for organizations that are legally recognized as nonprofits, the commissioners chose instead to fund a group that's not federally recognized, appears to be delinquent in paying its taxes, has problems with its record keeping, it's restricted and does not allow women, and has not been involved with the sheriff's office for several years for any rescue operations. So I would like the commissioners now to give me an answer. Will you cease funding Jeep Posse from this day forward?
I wouldn't give you an answer that I'm prepared to cease funding. I do believe your comments are enlightening, and I would ask staff to take up the baton and follow this to ground. I'd like to know more about it from our staff level, but I appreciate your comments very much. I'm not prepared to make a decision based upon your presentation, but I do want to look into the matter further.
And if the commissioners determine that this is accurate, and I got the records from the courthouse, so you own the records, if you do determine that this is true, there has never been a contract, will you then agree to cease funding the Jeep Posse?
They can't agree to anything at this meeting because this wasn't noticed as an action item. So,
correct.
If you want to get it on the agenda in a regular fashion, and it's noticed as an action item, then they can take action.
Okay, I will do that for the next meeting. Commissioners, thank you for your time.
And nice work, by the way. I appreciate your efforts very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, continuing on, more public comment? Ms. Bard?
I should hear somebody come get prepared and...
Nicole Bard, Highlands resident. At the last meeting, there was an agenda item on the funding for the VMT and where the county funds went. Brief conversation, and Lance, you had asked that Hugh do some analysis, and he in fact did send that to me. It was in the form of several of the ledger sheets themselves. I responded to him saying, you know, thanks for this, but I still have a couple questions. Can we meet? So we still need to meet on some questions I have there. However, he did indicate as part of the email he sent me that he was going to be speaking with Bill Maddox around any possible remedies that there might be for us, given the interlocal that we've got with the commission and the fact that Pat had sent a November request to them, telling them that they, with the spreadsheet that said they owed us anywhere from $700,000 to $950,000. So I'm just coming to you to ask you, what's the status on that? Do we see any possible violation of that interlocal, and where are we in looking at trying to get those funds?
I can speak generically on this as far as Hugh's schedule. If I'm wrong, he can answer. I think between the work that was done on the park fund and the work that is ongoing on the budget, the Rail Commission has had a lower assigned priority. I can also tell you, although I don't have a dollar amount, that Hugh and I spoke yesterday afternoon. We looked at, in fact, a large order of lumber that had been delivered down to the Gold Hill Depot for restoration of the south side of the building. And my direction to both Hugh and Jesse in my office was we're going to build a commission for that. So we are going through the process of testing the financial integrity of them. Is there a violation of the interlocal? I'm not aware of any. I mean, we haven't drawn yet because we haven't had an eligible project. We are now making improvements to the Gold Hill Depot. It is eligible as a rail project. We'll see what happens when they get the bill.
So what we voted for in November of 2010 as to that rail tunnel 6 and the depot in front of the Silverland is no longer a viable project?
They're all viable right now. I would say tunnel 6 probably the least likely because there's operator resistance in using it. I would tell you that the Virginia City Depot is always in play, but so is the Gold Hill Depot. They're all interlinked to the railroad projects. That's a railroad depot down there. So
are we not able to use the money that we've been sending to the Treasury, who then sends it to the Rail Commission, to pay down the bond that we took out for a project that we don't have? I mean, we're paying interest on a bond out of county revenues. And the bond ostensibly was floated to fund a project. You're saying we have no project. I just need to understand.
We've had these discussions over the past several meetings. Could we pay interest on the bond or pay down the bond with Rail Commission money? Probably yes. That's a decision that'll be made by the financial team. Do we intend to charge the Rail Commission as first recourse for any of our rail projects? That answer is yes, because there is reason and concern that those monies that they might not be quite as liquid as we would wish them to be.
Okay, and I'm concerned about being under the burden of a bond that we're not using and paying interest on. So how are we going to take care of that?
We seem to be doing just fine with it right now.
So the money out of the general fund is paying for the bond?
We have the ability out of either the general fund or again drawing on the Rail Commission. We're going to test the waters with the Rail Commission. That's Nicole. I've been round and round with you on this. I'm not going to do it in the public. You make it a candidate item. That's fine. I'll be there to respond.
It's not a candidate item. I've been talking about this for months. So
I've answered questions before.
Okay.
Never to your satisfaction.
So it's a non-answer.
Yeah.
Your words, not mine.
Ms. Houts?
Thank you again, Janet Houts from Martin. Last meeting when I was talking about a letter of engagement from the editors, I still have not received it. Yesterday, I attended the school meetings, and I got this letter of engagement. And I do not understand why Storer County cannot provide a letter of engagement from the auditors to provide to the public, or to me especially. Earlier, the board has mentioned, Commissioner Gilman mentioned that some people are very aggressive on the topics, on certain things. Well, for me, I prefer to resolve the problem within the county itself. But if I can't get resolved any of it, I will definitely go for other ways to get the information. As on the Piper House tax refunds, actually, I have some topics to discuss about race, but I do not know whether it's suitable for me to discuss at a public comment or not, because Piper House has just officially taken over in February this year. So is that returns, how is the debt returns going, paying to? Thank you.
Anybody else?
Dale.
Last up.
Yes, sir. Glad to be here.
That's the reason I try to get my stuff over the Sheriff's Department on the agenda, because you can't vote on it if it's not on the agenda. So you're basically leaving me out. Two meetings ago, you folks just moved second and carry $2 million for the fire department. Spend it. Enjoy it. And I think that if we're going to throw money at public agencies, the Sheriff's Department is entitled to another $2 million too. And I thought that a good investment would be Toyotas. They're the best brand in the world and the longest lasting. And I love them. And I can't get on here to even get you people to act on it, because it couldn't get on the agenda. And that bothers me. The sheriff didn't have anything to do with it. I marched to my own drummer, I guess you all know that. And I took it upon myself to think it would be a good thing for the county. I mean, we borrow $42 million from Lance's home office down there, TRI, but we're only borrowing another two, and to go with the two that they're going to get from the government borrowing it, I could probably get you a tax-free loan for 5 years on a fleet of Toyotas, and I wouldn't get anything out of it. Just be a nice old man. And you think old man Beach don't know anything. I was fleet manager for Operating Engineers Local 3 for 12 years in District 11. I had a fleet of cars and pickups, Jeeps, and I had to take care of center. So I do know what I'm talking about. And I just think it's good business. Those Chevys he's buying now is because it's on the cheap. And they're just not up to the job. Whenever I call 911, I need a cop. I'd like to think that winter or summer, four-wheel drive Toyota plow down to my house. They ask me, Mr. Beach, how can we help you? So well, all the goddamn neighbors are trying to kill me, and they're trying to get into my compound. I smell them all down.
Thank you, Mr. Beach. I think that, like every other department head, like the fire chief, we're going to leave it up to the sheriff to do his equipment acquisition request.
And we did not give Gary carte blanche on whatever dollar amount is floating around up there. We told Gary to go out to bid or get estimates, whatever it was, on the structure agents.
Exactly.
And I think Subaru is better than Toyota, so.
We'll vote on that later.
I believe the county has a Buy American practice.
Mr. Thompson, do you have public comment?
Thanks. Chairman,
I guess Chris is going to get the last word.
Mr. Chairman, Chris Thompson, I worked at TRI and for Mr. Gilman.
I just wanted to make a comment. There was a comment made, a cheap shot, about Mr. Gilman getting, TRI getting some loan from the county. There is no such thing. And, in fact, TRI prepaid, invested millions of dollars to build what was later turned over to the county on a very favorable deal for the county. So I think that comment, Mr. Chairman, was totally out of order, improper, and I have to stand up and defend TRI. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Chairman, he misinterpreted what I said. I said we owe TRI all that money.
Hey, this isn't a debate. It's a county commissioners meeting. No, I didn't say you could come back. You got that wrong. Anyone else? Okay, I think we just have one point. The next regularly scheduled meeting, April the 2nd, we're going to move it to 9 a.m. It'll be, Mr. Gallagher, we'll have tentative budget hearings that day, correct? So we want to get a little earlier start, so you'll have to get up a little earlier that day. We're not going to adjourn yet. We have do any correspondence?
Yeah, we have.
Okay. Meeting's adjourned.